Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Thursday, November 9th. The time is 9:05 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Annick McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman, Vice Chairman Bishop, Senator Machicki, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Stevens, and Senator Olson. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to invite David Teal, the Legislative Finance Division Director, to the microphone. If you're following us off-net or online, you should be able to find our documents. This particular PowerPoint is labeled Alaska Fiscal Future. It's dated November 9th, 2017. David Teal, Director, is also there. Mr. Teal, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I put myself on the record, although I think you did that. David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance, and some members of the public may wonder why we have the model in front of the committee again, because SB 26 is not in front of the committee. The answer to that's pretty simple, I think. It's that the model is designed to be a tool to help evaluate fiscal paths, and what is in front of your committee or the legislature, the special session, is the governor's employment tax. So the model is designed to help the legislature and others see how much, if any, tax is required to meet your fiscal goals. So that's why we're looking at the model. And a lot has changed since the last time you saw the model at the end of last session. As you know, the Department of Revenue updated the revenue forecast in October, just as special session started, followed soon after by OMB updating its 10-year expenditure plan, and then just last week, the permanent fund released projections that included a revised earnings rate, revised downward from 6.95 to 6.5%. Now, because it doesn't do much good to look at model output unless you know what you want the output to show, I want to spend a moment discussing what to look for in any scenario. This is not related to any specific screen print that we're going to show today. It's just related to the model in general. Essentially, it's just a way of asking what conditions make a particular plan a success. So slide three has some goals here that I guess I could say are the governor's goals or they're my goals or something, but goals on these things are individual. And individuals may not necessarily agree on the goals. In fact, I would say that if the House, Senate, and the governor could agree on the goals, you would have a bill already. So that the goals are something that may be common to all plans, but for instance, the Senate may want to add a goal that says we hope to accomplish various other goals without taxes. There's the goals here stated, some stated by the governor very clearly and others just sort of an interpretation of what he's asked for, what the Senate, what the House have looked for in models. So the first goal is that deficits will fade away before the projection period ends. You don't need to balance the budget in FY19 or FY20 as long as you're making progress and balance by 26 or 27, you can count that a win. Second goal is there are no unplanned draws from the earnings reserve account. Another way of saying that is that the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve account, is not depleted, because once you deplete the budget reserve account, the assumption is that you will then draw from the earnings reserve account. and any unplanned draw from the earnings reserve account reduces the balances, reduces the future payouts, and makes it harder and harder to have a plan that works. Third is that you want the permanent fund balance to keep pace with inflation. And fourth, and this is one that probably is less agreement on, but have some minimum level of permanent fund dividends. So setting your own goals is going to help you determine whether a plan works, and more importantly, how you can modify that plan to make it work better for you.
Mr. Teel, if we could pause for a moment, I would like to acknowledge that Senator Stedman and Senator Hughes have been with us the entire time, and I know that other policymakers are following this discussion online, so just wanted to thank Senator Hughes and Senator Stedman for joining us this morning. Please continue.
Thank you. Slide 4 reviews the changes that have occurred since last session. Actually, this slide is only the changes to revenue and expenditures. First is revenue. The fall forecast is generally lower than the 4% decline scenario that we used last year. I know there's some confusion on that. Legislators and the press, others have said that great news on the revenue forecast, it's higher than it was. That's true. The forecast that revenue released is higher. It's about $1 billion higher. But half of that occurs in 2027. We can't compare that to last year's model because it stopped in 26. So the roughly $529 million that revenue is that's left of that revenue forecast. In other words, the 19 through 26 revenue forecast published by the Department of Revenue is $529 million above last year's spring 4% decline. But last spring, the Department of Revenue omitted $65 million annually of premium taxes, insurance premium taxes. And this year, that $65 million is included in the forecast. $65 million a year times 8 years is $520 million. So you can see that revenue is essentially a wash. It's the same as last year's forecast. And again, here are the numbers. It's in the early years, it's down almost $100 million, then turns to being higher. The net reduction is $54 million over the period 19 through 26. That is only about $7 million a year. You won't even see that on the graphs.
Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Teel, I have before me the actual Department of Revenue fall or revenue forecast presentation that was given to Senate Finance on October 30th, 2017. Just want to be clear. I mean, the official was a 12% decline. The 4% was sort of an unofficial update, if you will. And their total change in general fund unrestricted revenue was $2.3 billion. From the preliminary fall to the spring official, and then with the 4% decline was, like you said, $1 billion difference, $921 million, with the greatest change being in the out years 26 and 27 once the credits were paid off. So pretty significant difference. Why do you show numbers differently than the method that Department of Revenue does? I just want to clarify for the public, there is a significant upside on revenue. Could you just explain the differences between Department of Revenue and Legislative Finance?
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Michicki, you are comparing the Department of Revenue's official numbers. As I said, they did not include in the spring forecast $65 million a year. That's now built in to their fall forecast. That accounts for $520 million of the difference. So what I'm comparing here is what we used in the model last year to what we're using in the model this year. So we had the $65 million premium increase built in last year, and of course we still built it in. So our revenue forecast in the model was $65 million a year higher than the official forecast. It's now identical to the official forecast because DOR corrected that $65 million error in the fall forecast. When they published the fall forecast, they included that additional $65 million, which is not oil revenue. So I guess one way of saying this is that the increase in revenue in the official forecast is not due to increased oil prices or production. It's primarily due to correction of a technical error in the forecast.
Senator Michicki, follow up?
No, I'm fine for now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
If I could, for those that are following at home, the Senate Finance Team in the Anchorage area heard from the administration. We heard from the Department of Revenue. We heard from DNR, and we heard from the Permanent Fund Corporation. So as Mr. Teal reflected earlier, the goal of this presentation is to establish a range of possibilities that Alaska faces. And there is a range. And so there is some pushback on the Department of Revenue. In comparing the price per barrel of oil that other nations in the world use versus Alaska's homegrown dollar forecast. And that affects our bottom line differently. And so all of these numbers are being pressed on because it's important to Alaskans that as we take up a discussion on the governor's proposed SB 4001. And what that is a payroll tax, as described by the administration. I believe Mr. Teal used different language to describe it today. I'm drawing a blank on what you specifically said, David. But I wanted to thank the department publicly because the Senate reached out to the Department of Natural Resources, to the administration, and asked for updated forecast numbers. And so we're just trying to get on the table with Alaskans the real changes and how the administration has, at our request, updated numbers, and our legislative finance team is now using those updated numbers that are different from the revenue forecast that was generated for the general public to look at. And if I could highlight and point to Senator Michicki's point, is that there is a great upside compared to what is now being described as an error. That's not how it was presented to the Senate Finance Committee last year. It was a judgment on the department that they forecasted a price, right? And so they got it wrong. And that's not I guess it's an error if it's hard cash. But they forecasted a different number, and Senator Michicki is pointing out that this slide, from some's perspective, may be a bit shy on the actual comparison from the revenue forecast. But Ledge Finance is trying to give us apples to apples to look at from our last point of a conversation with the public. So, again, I want to thank the administration. Typically, we don't see a revenue forecast until a bit later, and they press to get us that information. Some of that might change. And for this committee, I know that we know, but for the public at home, if the revenue forecast points out $60 a barrel oil, under Alaska state statute, credits are paid at a calculated rate of 10%. When the calculation or the forecast falls below that 60, tax credits specifically are paid at 15%. The current revenue forecast is projected at around 59. Senator Michicki, I'm looking to you, 59-something. Which creates an increase on our operating expense line. So those that might be waiting for receipt would see that as a good thing. Those that want additional investment in Alaska might see that as a good thing. But what it's doing, and others are pointing out, is if the national average for the price per barrel of oil is actually in the 60 to 65 range, that would reduce the operating budget call which will be good or bad, depending on your perspective, and would show actually increased revenue coming into our state. And so there is a variety of opinions on how we should look at this. And I just want Alaskans to know we are trying to narrow the gap so that we understand what the range of possibilities look like. Senator Machicki, comment?
Madam Chair, the only comment I would have is I've been here 6 years, and when I first came on to finance, we pressured at the time the state was using a very rosy outlook on the price of oil and production that overestimated revenue, and they sort of used it. That's the number that was used when we thought about what an affordable budget looks like. And at this table, we certainly pressured the administration to become more conservative. They've become very conservative in the outlook of price and production, in many cases overly so. That's all well and good, but we have to look at this in a realistic range. So these numbers now are being used in a way to evaluate the need for new revenue, and we just have to remember that those assumptions come with a range, and that range is likely, by looking at the International Energy Outlook from the EIA, the Energy Information Administration is likely overly conservative, and we'll talk about that a little later, I think, in the presentation. But I just think it's important for folks to realize that these are not necessarily, as we go to the charts, giving us hard facts. This is a conservative range, and in many cases, it's sort of a kind of worst-case outlook.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. And if I might point out, Legislative Finance, who works for us, is trying to give us an apples-to-apples comparison of a particular set of criteria that's before us, and so the public needs to know the criteria that underlies some of these issues. Mr. Teal, please continue.
I'd like to clarify something before I move on to expenditures, and that's that I think you'll recall that in the forecast, when DOR released its forecast last year, it was a 12% decline, as Senator Machicki noted, and that was because they hadn't revised the production forecast, but only the price forecast when they went from fall to spring forecast. They later said that the production numbers were stale, and that was the 12% decline scenario that we were looking at, which we never used in the model, because Senator Machicki and others pointed out that seemed pretty far from the facts as they were unfolding. And I think the legislature and everyone else agreed that the 4% decline scenario was probably more reasonable. That's not an error on anybody's part. That's simply a judgment call that turned out to be correct. The error that we refer to, and I guess I always want to be careful when you start talking about errors because then people want to point fingers. There's no big error here other than the fact that the diversion of insurance premiums to the health care reimbursement fund is a bill that sunsets in FY18. So that premium money will begin going back into the general fund. Department of Revenue simply overlooked that fact in publishing their out-year projections. So there's no serious error here. It was an oversight that is now corrected. So bottom line is that last year we used the 4% decline scenario, we matched revenue, except we added about $65 million to it. This year we match the official revenue forecast exactly. So there's no argument about the revenue numbers at all that I'm aware of.
Mr. Teal, and sometimes we fail to make this statement publicly, so I would like to say that I believe it's the last 3 years now, or is it the last 2 years that we've actually seen increases year over year in production, and that we are on track to do that again. And so we will be looking to the administration to see when that becomes a reality inside or an actual trend inside of our revenue forecast book, that we're not trending down when we've had 3 years of actually an uptick of production.
OK. Okay, so now turning to expenditures, slide 4 also shows that projected expenditures are different than we used last year. In fact, they're up by a cumulative $934 million from 19 through 26. Now, we can go into details about what that is, but essentially, inflation at 2.25% is built into these numbers, as are the increased oil tax credit contributions that you mentioned earlier. Note that from FY18, where we needed to put in roughly $75 million into that fund, the 19 required statutory minimum deposits, $175 million. So that oil tax liability accounts for a great deal of the increase in the expenditures that you see on slide 4. And, of course, the revenue and the expenditures combine to give you the deficit, and you can see that with lower revenue, higher expenditures, the deficit is increased. And here positive numbers mean the deficit is $173 million larger than it was in last year's model, going up and then declining, and by 26 it's actually reversed.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
And what was that deficit last year?
The drawing a blank on that. I mean, I get...
Without the structural draw.
Without the structural draw, it's somewhere around 2.8 billion, depending on
2.8 billion.
So we'll see that in the next slide, because it hasn't changed a whole lot actually. So if you want to just wait for that slide and talk about the third major change in the assumptions that go into the model, when Commissioner Fisher was in front of this committee, he explained to you that Cowan and Associates, our investment advisors, had recommended that the permanent fund use a lower rate of return than the 6.95% that we used last year. He didn't specify what that amount was. He talked in terms of inflation plus some. So it turns out that the permanent fund release projections dated September 30th, which now use an anticipated rate of 6.5%.
And while, Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out that this is the impact on a deficit that is going north, but the actual deficit is substantial.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair. So,
Senator Machicki.
Back to the middle row, Mr. Teal. So looking at the numbers that have been plugged into the fall forecast for oil price, the price forecast doesn't have us to $60 until 2021. That was dropped down fairly substantially from the spring forecast. Yet you're assuming larger credits on actual price beginning in FY20. Is there a reason you didn't match the tax payment liability to the price forecast from the Department of Revenue?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, we did match. Our revenue numbers in the model match the Department of Revenue's official forecast exactly. The expenditure forecast that we're using matches OMB's 10-year expenditure plan, which does build that in the change in the oil tax payments into their expenditure plan. So it's accounted for. I mean, the tax credit payments show up as an expenditure, and it's included.
Senator Machicki.
It just looks like it's accounted for early by a year or two. It'd be interesting. It's interesting to see the background slides on that, to see when they start plugging in the higher oil tax payments.
through the chair, they start plugging those in 19. And that's why you don't see an increase from 19 to 20. But there, of course, is an advantage to those higher tax credit payments, and that is that instead of continuing to make payments for years out into the future, the expectation is that the credits will now be paid off in 2025. That means that your 2026 and 27 deficits decline substantially. And in the models, you'll see that we're now showing that in 26 and 27, we flip over and have budget surpluses in those years, depending on the assumption.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I could be totally off base, and you can blow me right out of the water, but I'm going to make a comment. So these credits we're talking about, those are the credits that are still owed. Are we just correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
And this body tried to pay these credits how many years ago? So, I mean, if we could have got them paid when we wanted to pay them, these deficits would be a lot smaller going forward today. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Thank you.
If I could, as a follow-up, I see Mr. Peterson on behalf of the administration sitting in the audience. If we could have confirmation that the calculation in the OMB 10-year forecast, and our finance team has already confirmed that you've done that, but if we could just have a follow-up with Senator Machicki reflecting whether the 15% payback is what's in the forecast going forward, or if it drops back to the 10% for the tax credit inside of the 10-year formula from OMB, that would be helpful. Thank you. Mr. Teo, please continue.
Those what we then use in the model is the official Department of Revenue forecast and the OMB spending plan and the permanent fund projections. That determines the base case of the model. You may be tempted to overstate the impact of the decline in permanent fund earnings. After all, losing half a percentage point on a $60 billion fund means earnings are down by $300 million. That's a lot of money. But you also should know that FY17 was a very good year for the permanent fund, and that, let's just use some numbers instead of trying to explain it conceptually. If we start with a balance, FY16 balance of $52.8 billion in the permanent fund, and if you earned the 6.95% and subtracted dividends, you'd have come out with about $55 billion balance. Instead, our balance is $59 billion. So there's $4 billion more in the permanent fund than we had projected there would be in last year's model. Now, 6.5% earnings on that extra $4 billion is about $270 million in earnings from a balance that we didn't realize would be there. So the decline in earnings is not 300, it's 300 offset by 270 in additional earnings. So the net loss there is about $30 million a year. And it's slightly more complicated than that because the lower earnings will affect the balance in the long run. But the model isn't based on what the permanent fund earns to pay government. It's based on a fixed 5.25% payout. Well, the 5% payout is based on the balance, not future earnings. So the $4 billion extra gives us higher payouts in this version of the model than we had last year. Does that make sense? So what we wind up with is something that looks like it's a bad deal here. I mean, clearly, revenue is down slightly. That doesn't help. Expenditures are up. That doesn't help try to find a solution. And then permanent fund earnings are down. Again, doesn't help you find a solution. But revenue is essentially a wash and is slightly more than offset by the increase in permanent fund payout to government. So really what you're trying to do here is cover the additional expenditures. That's the fiscal situation has deteriorated, but not by as much as you might think by looking at these, that all three of your major drivers in the model went the wrong way. The model output's still about the same. In slide 5, we actually turn to a screenshot from the model. I know this is hard to read, but this is the no POMV payout. You could also call it the status quo or the no plan scenario if you want, but this is what it looks like going forward if we do not use the earnings reserve account to pay government. You can see that there's very little change from the model last year. We said the CBR, Constitutional Budget Reserve, would be depleted in 19. That's still the case. Here you have continued deficits of 2.4 to 2.8 and going up even into the $3 billion range. In number 3, those huge deficits mean that if you're going to continue spending the money and there's no CBR available, you draw the money from the earnings reserve account. You can see that in the upper left quadrant, the red bars, or you can see it in the lower left where we show you the amount of those unplanned draws. And they are, you know, touching $3 billion. You can see that because you have these unplanned draws, the earnings reserve account is depleted or depleting by 27. You probably have a year left before that is also depleted. And, of course, because you have unplanned draws, the value of the permanent fund declines. And this is not simply a matter of failing to keep up with inflation. Note that there's an actual decrease in the value of the permanent fund. Now, of course, that occurs strictly in the earnings reserve account. The principal cannot go down, but this graph is showing the combined principal and earnings reserve account. The earnings reserve account is declining, and therefore the total of them declines.
Mr. Teal, if we could pause there for a moment. The corpus of the permanent fund is invested, so it can go up or down. Is that accurate? You just stated that it could not go down. The legislature cannot touch the corpus, but the corpus is invested in a variety of assets around the world and in a variety of ways, real estate, stocks and bonds, other assets. Those assets fluctuate just like the earnings reserve. It's just that the legislature or government does not touch that money at all, but it can move in an up or down way as the corpus.
Madam Chair, that's correct, and I would go further in describing it. Any investment is subject to loss. The principal and the earnings reserve are co-invested, same portfolio. They essentially, for an investment standpoint, they're the same. However, any losses that occur accumulate in the earnings reserve account. Any gains also accumulate in the earnings reserve account. That's why we often say that you should not confuse a budget reserve account with this earnings reserve account. because the budget reserve account, the only way you're going to lose money there in significant amounts is to spend it. If you lose 10% on your investments, you may lose 10% of your total, say it's $2 billion, you're going to lose $200 million. But all earnings and losses of the permanent fund concentrate in the earnings reserve account. And so if you have a 10% loss in the permanent fund, it's not just a $15 billion earnings reserve account falls by $1.5 million. It is you lost $6 billion, all of which reduced the balance of the earnings reserve account. So that's the danger of considering the earnings reserve account as a budget reserve account. It can go away very quickly, as it did in 2008 and 2009.
Senator Machicki, followed by Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We also learned with a recent meeting, Senate Finance, with the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, that they used to automatically repair realized losses in the corpus by drawing from the earnings reserve. They believe now that there may be a problem with that, with the court case that came that may require legislative appropriation to keep the corpus whole from a loss. So that may be further complicated with use of the earnings reserve for partially funding government. I think that's something we still need to learn some more about.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. I would note that this is informational so that Alaskans can stay engaged on how many variables that we have on the table at any one time for conversation as we face this fiscal challenge that is before us. The CBR, Mr. Teel, we haven't talked about it, but we haven't talked about it today. But for those following today, the CBR has a little bit over $2 billion remaining in it. And so some Alaskans believe we can draw that $2 billion down and still may not need to touch the earnings reserve. And so can you comment on that? We've been at least told by the administration that that money is currently being used as a bridge. Now, we already knew at this table that that money is receiving a lower rate of return because of the liquidity, how we keep it available for use short term, because according to Alaska state statute, it can be used within a five-year period. And so Department of Revenue triggered that a few years back and liquidated that, so the rate of return on the CBR is much less because of its liquidity. But Mr. Teel, there is a recommendation out of your shop as well as out of OMB that has indicated we need at least $2 billion as a bridge. Because Alaskans should know that all money doesn't come into the state on January 1st or on July 1st at the start of our budget. And so there is a need for cash on a more even basis than we receive, whether it's production that's coming in, whether it's the tourism industry and receipts. They just don't all show up the day we start our budget. Mr. Teel, could you comment on the CBR so that Alaskans understand that even though you're mathematically showing it going away, there is a need to keep an amount of money in the CBR to maintain consistency of payments from the state of Alaska?
Madam Chairman, what you said is accurate. I think you should also be aware that although there is what they call cash flow needs, the CBR, Constitutional Budget Reserve Account, is not the only source for that. You could use the Earnings Reserve Account for cash flow needs, but remember, when you do that, you're pulling cash out of an account earning 6.5% instead of 2.5% to 3%. So you want to get money where it's cheapest. But there's another source of money, which is what most states do. They issue revenue anticipation notes, which are just short-term notes borrowing the money in the market, which is probably available to you at 3% or less. And that can cover the cash flow needs as well. That said, I agree with OMB that $1 billion is as low as you want to go. $2 billion is a reasonable amount to say we're just not going below $2 billion in the CBR. Personally, if you're asking that, I'd prefer $5 billion. But how much you need is a personal thing based on what you believe our chances of having a revenue failure are. Understand that the budget reserve account is not really designed to be a constant source of revenue like we've used it in the past years. It's designed to be a shock absorber when we have a revenue failure. And revenue failure to me just means, for us, oil revenue didn't show up the way we expected it to. Okay, when that happens, you need reserves. Theoretically, you're only using the reserves that you need to fill the gap, and within a short time, you've fixed your fiscal gap and you again replenish your constitutional budget reserve. For the last 6 years, we have not used it that way. There is no replenishment, not that happened and not that's in sight. So we're not using the CBR as a shock absorber. We're using it as a deficit filler with no hope of bouncing back.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that that is an important point that the general public should realize. And the problem is that we're also, under the scenario going forward with these graphs, using the ERA the same way. And we, as a legislature, are required to balance the budget constitutionally. And we have been using the CBR to fill the deficit. And since that is being depleted, we are now considering using the ERA to balance the budget. And the most telling graph I think the public should look at is slide number 5, which is the permanent fund decline in value. While we are, if we do not have a POMV payout, we could see the permanent fund lose value of close to $15 billion by 2027, and that is an astonishing number. The Senate has passed the POMV plan twice, knowing that without a POMV plan, the permanent fund is will continue to lose value. And when you have the permanent fund losing value, that also reflects on the amount available for the dividend. And we have included increases in the dividend in the Senate's version of Senate Bill 26. But the problem that I see is when you're looking at the previous slide, we have impacts over the next 8 years of close to $1 billion in differences on top of the $2.8 billion that Director Teal had mentioned. So we not only are we facing major reductions in the fund itself, we are also having a problem addressing how we fill the deficit. And that is why we are looking at structural changes to the way the fund is used. But that in and of itself is not enough to turn the tides on our operating budget, which we are constitutionally required to balance. And that is why I think the governor has come forward with the revenue measure that he has presented to us. people are saying that when you look at FY 27 or 26, the tide turns. The problem is, how do we get to 2026 when the tide turns? And that is the battle that we are having. We have on this page, notwithstanding the $2.8 billion that Director Teal had said that the deficit is, that we're starting with, we have another close to $1 billion that that is before us in the recalculation, and that is the problem that we are facing, and the public should understand.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Director Teal, do you have a comment on that? Senator Machicki.
Actually, mine is about permanent fund dividends on this slide. I see you have the dividend override on, and it doesn't seem like this model is paying out a dividend. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, no. It's, important point. It assumes that dividends continue to be paid according to the statutory formula. And, of course, that's one of the problems with this scenario, is that because of the high dividends, the high dividends contribute to the deficit, which causes you to draw. It's a combination of the deficit and the high dividends that cause the permanent fund value to decline. So this is not assuming no dividends. It's assuming status quo dividends of $2,200 and rising up to $3,000 per year. It's, to Senator Hoffman's comment, I think it's important to note that this is just a different way of saying what he said, is that when the earnings reserve is gone, which it looks like will happen by 2028, then dividends and or government expenditures, or the government payout, however you want to say that, they're not going to get the money that they've been accustomed to. The money doesn't exist. Dividends either have to vanish or go way down because there simply isn't enough money in the earnings reserve account to pay dividends and fill the deficit. So something breaks badly beginning in about 2028.
Again, for those that are following online, this is a snapshot in time with a specific set of criteria. I asked my staff to pull the average earnings for the permanent fund because it's a huge criteria piece that's on this static snapshot. So since its inception, the permanent fund has grown by 8.78%, and we have a new actuary supported 6.5. That might not be the specific, Mr. Teal, that they asked for, but that's how the board responded to interactions with the actuaries on behalf of the people of Alaska and dropped their earnings assumption down to the 6.5 out instead of the 6.95, I think is what you said was in earlier. It should be noted that for the last 5 years, the average earnings on the permanent fund, both the corpus and the earnings reserve, is at 8.94%. So again, significantly higher than is being reflected here. But also should be noted for the last 3 years, it's been at 6.18, which is lower as far as the short tracking mechanism. So this is a huge swing, as Mr. Teal said earlier. A half a percent could mean $300 million based on, $60 billion worth of investments. And so these are huge fluctuations that your legislators are having to consider as we look at the health of the earnings reserve account and access to a sustainable draw or an unplanned draw. And an unplanned draw is, from my opinion, one of the worst case scenarios that we could face. And we did have Ms. Rodell in front of us. We also saw something in the media talking about what unplanned draws might do in the future. as far as the investment board making decisions based on trying to react or be proactive to what the legislature might do. So if Alaskans have questions, please contact your legislator and follow along in this conversation, because there are many knobs on this fixed slide that can change, both to benefit Alaskans and both to increase the challenges that we face in our operating budget specifically. Mr. Teal, are there other questions or comments from members of Senate Finance? Senator Bishop.
Just a comment. I'm glad you made your previous comments for those that might be dialing in late. This page five is, as David said, the status quo, no plan. You know, that you could be dialing in and sounds like a George Orwell War of the Worlds conversation here on the radio. We do have a plan. We're just going to figure out how we're going to get to the plan. So thank you.
So noted, Senator Bishop. The Senate certainly has proposed one set of ideas to close the gap, and the other body has proposed another set of ideas, and hence trying to come together for the people of Alaska to do what is best. Mr. Teal.
Okay. I'd like to maybe step back a little bit. There are some new members on the Finance Committee and legislators in the room, and even for those of you that have seen this model before, it's been a while, and it might help to just quickly review some of the assumptions that are in here. On expenditures, you have two lines. The dark line is the OMB 10-year expenditure plan with dividends, and the dotted line is without. So the holes that we've talked about before, I think Pat Pitney, director of OMB, was here in front of you and talked a little bit about the holes in 19. Those are filled in the OMB 10-year expenditure plan. So they're already built in, no corrections necessary. So we are using the OMB 10-year plan, except that, as Director Pitney noted, they did not have a number in there for supplementals. So what this dotted line is showing is the OMB plan plus $50 million a year for supplementals appropriations. We put that number in there. It's an arbitrary number. It's intended to be the unanticipated costs of fire suppression, other programs. It's, I think, a reasonable guess at a consistent level of supplementals, but that's subject to your change. As you know, you can change many of the assumptions in the model. That's one of them.
Mr. Teal, if we're trying to place the most conservative estimate so that we have a wider bandwidth to look at, is there an average then for fiscal notes that have been normally attached to a 10-year OMB plan that we're not considering now? I mean, should we actually add more money onto this particular scenario? When we always pass bills, or at least in the past there's been bills passed, they usually carry fiscal notes. It seems we're starting to anticipate things that haven't realized themselves now, and so we're putting more variables into our considerations than we ever have in the past, at least.
Madam Chair, that's always a problem when you try to run a model. And that's why we go to the Department of Revenue for the revenue projections. We do it because they're best at it. It's why we turn to the Permanent Fund for their earnings projections. You may disagree with 6.5 instead of 6.95, but we're going to use the Permanent Fund projections because they're the ones who are investing the money. And we just say, if that's what you tell us, that's going to be our base case. The same is true of expenditures. What you see on this line is that the expenditure plan is designed to maintain the FY18 level of service. and therefore it grows at 2.25% with inflation. You may disagree with that. You may say the legislature wants to bend that expenditure curve downward. You can do that in a scenario. We just use these things for the base case. Similarly with supplementals, it might be 50, it might be 100 with fiscal notes. Sometimes they're negative. The sum of the fiscal notes is negative. Sometimes they're very large. There's no real way to put in a number and say, we all agree on that one, because I don't know that you can. We just try to use the best numbers we have available to us from various sources and then try to fill in very few things. We have not built in fiscal notes. We did build in supplementals. That might not be enough money, and we might not be conservative enough on the expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Till. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that's exactly what the Senate has requested. We need to use the best numbers possible, and I'm glad Director Teal mentioned that if there are differences, they should be discussed at this table, but these are the numbers that that we requested. We want the best numbers available.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, which is why I point out that fiscal notes are not on there, and they are a spend, but not considered in the OMB as well as the supplementals, because we can't anticipate what is going to happen, whether it's a forest fire or other natural disasters. Those are what supplementals are supposed to be. But from the Senate's perspective, Mr. Teal, this is not directed at you, but more towards the administration. The Senate has continually requested a downward trend on spending, and we have not been able to accomplish that during budget negotiations with the other body. Even with the best of intentions to drop the budget by $350 million last year, we could not even achieve that in our own body. And we are looking to the administration, instead of adding supplementals and additional spend, to find cost-saving measures to be able to provide the services for less or evaluate those services and find services that we no longer can afford to provide. So it's not directed at you, but as we look at this continuum of adding now a supplemental into our conversation, understanding that even with that addition, sometimes there are fiscal notes that can take us either north or south of our numbers, given the variable that a half of percent can be $300 million of earnings in the permanent fund, and we're 2 years or two full percentage points down. Now we're in the billions of dollars that would be, or above $1 billion that could be additional revenue. That is the wide range of variance that we have in trying to find a path forward. Senator Machicki.
Just 2 points, Madam Chair. One of them is, I know we may not be at the number that the Senate has strived for, but if we were plugging in FY14 numbers going forward with a 2.25% inflation rate, this would be a very different looking chart. I mean, we've reduced expenditures fairly significantly. It would be interesting to look at that model if we hadn't been successful in some reductions. We'd be off the page in no time whatsoever. The second point I'd like to make is that there have been other changes to the model other than the capital budget or the supplemental budget increase that was not on previous versions. We've also, the first number out and growing is an OMB number that has a capital budget more than twice what our current spend is on capital, which has somewhat dramatically changed the picture here as well. So the Senate doesn't necessarily support a lot of the numbers in the model. We're looking at a baseline, and I don't know if we'll have a chance to look at a model that isn't static later in this presentation and perhaps put some numbers that might be more along the line of our expectations. But I just wanted to make that clear. There have been other changes in the background information and data that goes into this model that is different than what we looked at in the past.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Brief at ease.
money out of them.
Senate Finance could come back to order, please. Apologize for that delay. This is Senate Finance. Mr. Teal, we are here to talk about the variation of criteria that are on some of your proposals. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Timely at ease, actually, because it gave me a moment to have a conversation with Pat Pitney, who said that I was correct in saying that the expenditure plan is designed to maintain the 18 level of services, and therefore agency budgets grow at 2.25. I would have continued by saying other things grow at different rates. We have the statewide items, retirement, debt, oil and gas tax credits, that use individual projections. So it's not an exact 2.25% inflation. And then, as Senator Michiki noted, the capital budget, last year we were using a figure of 180. This year, because it's in the plan, we're using a starting point of 225, growing with inflation of 2.25%. But what Director Pitney mentioned was that they will be revising their plan. It is exactly as I described it, what they believe it might take to maintain 18 levels of service. It's not a policy plan, and they will be revising the 10-year plan when the budget comes out to reflect the governor's policies. It will not necessarily be this same level of expenditures. Now, I assume that means that the revision may be downward, but I guess you could also argue that the revision could be upward. And so I think we have to wait and see what the 10-year plan looks like. That said, the Department of Revenue has also said that the forecast they provided in October is a preliminary forecast, so that, again, by the time you meet in January, perhaps to discuss SB 26, both the expenditure and revenue plans may differ from what you're looking at here. And, of course, as you've said several times today, that these are all just variables. We've put together the best assumptions that we can, but you're not required to believe all of those assumptions, and that's where having the live model is helpful, because you can actually say, what if we have 6.95% returns? What if we grow at less than the rate of inflation? What if the capital budget is different than projected, and so on and so on? So what you should notice here is that the growth here without dividends is at $4.4 billion here in FY18, growing to $5.6 billion by 27. So that's substantial growth. As you know, that's operating, and oil and gas tax credits are up by about $100 million a year for the first several years of this. Now, the cumulative increase in expenditures from the prior model you already saw is over $900 million through 26, or roughly $120 million a year. That's the number that we build in to the expenditure plan, which you may want to change. As I said earlier, we've used the numbers directly from the revenue forecast. And the permanent funds rate of 6.5 is also included in the base scenario. So now you've seen what's in this scenario. We've gone through the 5 points on the chart. You can now switch to slide 6, which shows what might happen if there were a POMV payout. It says here, SB 26 Senate. I want to make it clear that this is not the full Senate plan. This is simply the Senate payout. plan of, under SB 26, meaning 5.25 for a couple of years, then 5, and it's the Senate split between government and dividends. So what we see here is that the deficits are filled. By FY 27, there's a surplus. That's goal number one is met. And although the life of the CBR is extended from 19, it's still exhausted by FY 23. So because the CBR is exhausted, and we assume that when that occurs, you will fill the deficit from the earnings reserve account, you immediately click over to unplanned draws from the earnings reserve account. So there you could say, well, goal number two is not met because you have unplanned draws. The permanent fund does keep pace with inflation, almost, but it's hard to see there, but the permanent fund real value declines just by a bit, and that's due to these unplanned draws. And it shouldn't be any surprise, because if you're earning 6.5% and inflation takes away 2.25% of that, your real rate of return is 4.25%. And here you can see that the nominal payout is 5%, but the effective plan payout is about 4.7%. Well, you can't pay out 4.7% from a fund that's real earnings are only 4.25% and maintain the real value. So not maintaining real value here is that goal number three is not met. And, of course, permanent fund dividends up here do maintain their $1,000 and grow with the payout. So the goal of $1,000 dividends, number four, is met. Now, I am not saying the Senate plan does not work, because, again, this is not the Senate plan. The Senate plan, from the beginning, said, here's what we want for a mechanism to draw from the earnings reserve account. Here's how we want to split that, and continued by saying, and we will reduce expenditures. So this may not meet all four goals, and you may or may not agree with all those goals, but it is not intended in any way to say that the Senate plan doesn't work. In it, we have the revenue limit disabled. And for those of you who don't know what that is, I should probably explain that. That was something that probably is a very seductive term for many people who want to reduce the footprint of government or government expenditures, however you want to say that, because what the revenue limit would do is reduce the payouts from the permanent fund earnings reserve account when oil revenue is high. But if you turn that revenue limit on, it actually causes you to have unplanned draws, because it shuts down, even in this revenue scenario, it shuts down draws from the earnings reserve account, and then turns right around and says, your planned draw, reduced by the revenue limit, was insufficient to fill a deficit. Now you've got an unplanned draw.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Unplanned draw is the same as an unstructured draw.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Teel, please continue. Senator Machicki, did you have something?
Well, just to define that a little further, your unplanned draw is any amount out of the earnings reserve over above your POMV payout.
Correct.
And just one more question, Madam Chair. Your real value declining is what you're saying is if your effective payout is 4.7%, your interest is 2.25%, you're at about 6.95, and the new earnings number is 6.5. So that's the difference you're talking about on the real value loss?
Through the chair, that's correct. The biggest impact of a 6.5% rate of return on the permanent fund is that you now make it much harder to keep pace with inflation. The payout, as you saw, was not reduced, in fact, was higher at 6.5% because of the big earnings in 17. However, in the long term, a 6.5% earnings real return now, subtract your 2.25 inflation, is only 4.25%. You cannot sustain a payout of 5%, a nominal or 4.7 in that scenario, even with royalties going into the permanent fund and helping it to maintain its real value. Now, that's real close, but it again, if that's a goal, is to maintain the value of the permanent fund, is that your number one goal, and does it have to be above, or is it just that's close enough? I mean, these are things that you as legislators need to decide. When is a plan successful? What criteria is most important to you?
Mr. Teal, I think that's why we put in a 3-year review on this, so that we could fine-tune that. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the general public wants a fiscal plan, but they also want a dividend. And that is the dividend amount between the House and the Senate is between $1,000 and $1,250. So I guess what is the increment of $100 million? Is that additional $150 to the dividend?
Through the chair, I guess you could determine that. I think it's fair to say that going from $1,000 to $1,250, which is what the House was proposing, costs about $175 million a year.
Right.
So that
what is $100 million?
$100 million would...
$1,150?
Yeah, probably in that neighborhood.
So that, I think, is a major point that should be considered, because we're looking at an optimum of $1,000. I think the administration doesn't even believe that is possible. We looked at a budget that we passed last year at $1,100. And, I think that is a big variable that this body and the general public is looking at. What is the level of the dividend?
And of course, if you decide to look at the model live today, that's something that's readily changeable. So you can see the actual cost of putting dividends at $11.50, that sort of thing.
And $100 million today, Madam Chair, is quite significant in the scheme of things. That would eat up one-third of what the governor is proposing in income if the dividend was at $1,150. So I just wanted to point that out to the members, but particularly to the general public.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Yep. Mr. Teal, I would like to advise committee members we have a floor session that begins at 11, so in an effort to get you out so that you have time to go to your offices first, If we could wrap up in about 15 minutes, that would be helpful. We do want to get to the presentation where we can input our own data and caution the general public in taking a look at these static pages on our website, that they have an embedded set of variables that can change the output dramatically. Mr. Teal.
Okay. So one thing you may want to notice or pay attention to on this is that although this POMV by itself, again, I mean there are no additional revenues and following the OMB expenditure plan, that it fails two goals, to achieve two goals. But notice that the earnings reserve account is growing and that, in fact, you're back to a surplus in 27. That means it's actually very close to being successful. Now, slide 7 shows just an example here of the same POMV payout, Senate plan, same split to dividends, everything looks the same, except that expenditures are constrained to half the rate of inflation. That's agency and capital expenditures. And by doing that alone, you have now eliminated the unplanned draws, and the CBR then does not vanish. It dips down but then recovers, and the earnings reserve is growing. So I guess the short way of saying this is that all it takes to achieve all four of those goals is to constrain expenditures. Now, that's not cuts. Let me be clear. That's still growing at half the rate of inflation, or roughly $50 million a year. And some would argue that your problems are solved in that scenario. That's not exactly the Senate plan. There are many other ways you could cut. You know, the Senate plan was more a cut. But what this chart shows is that you don't need actual reductions in the budget to have a successful plan. You simply need to reduce the rate of growth.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The rate that you have up there, Mr. Teal, 1.125%, is similar to the five-year trailing CPI for the state of Alaska, which is based in Anchorage, which I believe that the Senate had in its plan originally. So it's close to what we have. So that's the first thing, the comment that I'd like to make. And then the second comment is, you said that just now we don't necessarily have to make cuts. We just have to control the growth of government in the future. That is true. It does not give us the cushion, bringing in the previous comments of if we have an unplanned emergency or unplanned expense that warrants funding or we need to address. So that doesn't give us the flexibility, I think, that we fully need. But it's a better scenario, and I'm pleased to see that you modeled it. Thank you.
And the senator is correct. It is just a scenario. And I think you're more aware than I am that cutting the budget or constraining the budget is easier said than done. I mean, it's very easy to sit here and say all you have to do is grow at half the rate of inflation. But when it comes to achieving that, you may find it far more difficult than simply saying it.
Senator Machicki.
I just want to also point out that this is with many layers of conservatism on the production forecast, on the price forecast, the assumption that we cannot have any reductions. I mean, even with some slight reductions, it changes significantly. If there is a consideration of a small, fuel tax sort of revenue thing, this changes significantly. And this is after adding the higher capital budget and a supplemental budget that we didn't have in the last model. So I think it represents a range that could be significant with just a little bit of upside, right? Of course, you have that challenge if there's a downside. And on the other price, I don't believe that production downside is realistic in the short term. Potentially in the long term, there could be a significant increase. But price is probably the least controllable variable sitting at this table that could present a challenge or could be a much rosier outlook in a relatively short time.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Mr. Teel, can you tell us in dollars instead of percents what the 2.5 to the 1.5 shift is in dollars?
I just shifted to the live Excel model, and that is built in. Here's the 10-year expenditure plan, and what this is showing is the change in percent and dollars. So you can see that it's again, this is under the expenditure plan. It's first filling the holes from 18 is a big jump in the 19 budget, $400 million. And after that, it grows by 100, 120, somewhere in that neighborhood each year. That's inflation. Now, if you were to go back here and look at the chart that we were just looking at, which is the Senate growing at half the rate of inflation, 1.12, you're looking at that, and you can see that the growth now, you're reducing the growth by 37, 80, 125, et cetera. So over the course of through 27, you're saving $2 billion. But the budget is still increasing, 135, et cetera. These numbers are roughly half of the 10-year plan. But yes, and I guess I'd say that, you know, the model is constantly improving, or we're trying to constantly improve it. And looking at the goals, I think, is valuable because the goals come with metrics. You can actually measure whether the model does what you want. So we've added a number of things to the model this year that help you see whether you're achieving your goals or how far away you might be. This is one of them. It tells you that under that half of inflation, the budget grows by this much, but it is less than the OMB expenditure plan by these numbers.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Teel, can you point out whether or not these charts reflect the four-time draw? And if so, how does that...
Through the chair, for those that don't know what Senator Hoffman's referring to, there's a provision in the bill that was proposed by the governor that talks about transferring from the earnings reserve account to the corpus the amount of the earnings reserve account that exceeds four times what the prior year payout was. So shorthand, we just call it the four times rule. What it means is it's a way of inflation-proofing the permanent fund, making sure that but it's not going to affect the sum of the value, the earnings reserve and the principal, because all you're doing is putting the earnings reserve into the principal, taking it off the table. You can never spend it. You can see that here in 19, assuming that you begin paying a draw in 19 and implementing the four times provision, which is included in SB 26. there's a huge reduction in the earnings reserve account. If you don't want to do that, I'm going to change this to custom because, well, that's what happens if the four times rule is changed. You don't make those transfers to the earnings reserve account, and the rest of the model will change, except that you're not quite meeting your inflation-proofing goal again. But I should look at the model, see what this is doing.
Senator Bishop, you had a question.
Just a comment. I think the four times rule is a prudent thing to do. The easiest new revenue we have is the power of earnings. And by protecting that, that's the fastest revenue source we have.
Mr. Teal, our bells are ringing, so I just want to put senators on notice.
Yeah, I was just going to show you that, but I'm having a hard time using the number pad because my number lock is not on or something, so I couldn't change the model, but I can, I hope, simply change it here and go back and show Senator Hoffman that, again, the Senate plan with the four times inflation proofing and theoretically now without it. So I know you're out of time, and you know we can run through this model with you in small groups or with the committee. I think it works far better in informal small groups, but if you want it in front of the committee, that's certainly your choice to do that, and we can then go through various scenarios.
Thank you, Mr. Teal. I would point out that there are some agreed-upon goals from the Senate majority, and that is right-sizing government. And so I don't want to speak out of turn and would ask my colleagues to correct me if I don't get it right, but that is to reduce the budget. And in the face of not being able to reduce the budget, certainly holding the budget down. So is there any objections to that particular goal at this table, at least, that someone would like to express? So we do have similar goals, and that's why we've been working with legislative finance on these types of graphs. We want to preserve a dividend for the people of Alaska. We want to ensure that the corpus of the permanent fund is growing and that it retains its value. We want to reinvest and improve our position in the CBR and the earnings reserve and make sure that we are able to save money. And with this particular static, that's fixed in time, a document, we can do that with small changes to how we do business, but it does require us to work with the administration and our employees and the communities that are affected by each of these decisions to try to hold down inflation, which is why it's difficult, at least for me, to consider a conversation about additional revenues until we actually stand up 26, because there is so many variables in the use of our earnings that can change how we have to move forward, that if we don't get this right for the people of Alaska, that then we are not making good decisions going forward about revenue and the amount of revenue that may or may not be needed and when that revenue may or may not be needed. And so I only speak for myself on those comments. Please do not blame other senators for my comments, but there are small things that we can do to right the particular course that we are on with the growth in government. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think one of the bigger points of contention between the House and the Senate, and other members even have a higher variation, and that is the split of the earnings. You know, the Senate has a 25-75, the House has one-third, two-thirds split, and there are members on both sides of the aisle that feel that that should be a 50-50 split. That is going to be crucial to how much money goes to the dividend and how much money goes to operation of government. So I just wanted to point that out. The one picture that we're seeing is the lowest amount of split at 25-75, giving us a dividend of $1,000. And I don't know if that is an achievable number, but it's a significant dollar amount.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Machicki, did you have a comment?
Well, it would have been nice to have time just to look at some slight variations on price and production forecasts that I think are not unrealistic and probably more probable than what we're looking at. I think folks would see how that model changes significantly, even with if you plugged in last spring's forecast on price, which I'm not sure why it was reduced. The EIA did not reduce to that level, but perhaps we'll have another opportunity to do that, but you would see that there's nothing unreasonable about our approach, that by just constraining the growth of government, and I'm not giving up on a responsible cuts, I think there's still potential for both sides to come together on those cuts, that the Senate plan was not unreasonable. It works. Whether or not we all feel that that gives enough leeway for other downside potential, that's yet to be determined. But I appreciate your approach today. I think you kind of gave the worst case on if we do nothing. The situation if we allow government to grow at 2.25% or higher, and then what happens if we can just do some constraint on that growth. And I think it gives a healthy outlook. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. And we have been reaching out to the administration along those lines. And I appreciate the administration coming forward over the last week and a half with additional information for our consideration. I would advise you that this afternoon at 1:30, we'll be hearing from Commissioner Fisher and Tax Director Ken Alper on SB 4001, the employment tax or payroll tax, as others have defined it. Tomorrow morning, that's Friday, November 10th, at 8 a.m., we'll hear an overview on the changes made to SB 54, crime and sentencing, and the fiscal impacts. Some of those have not been thoroughly talked about, so we thought we would give the opportunity for those at home who might want to listen to the conversation around what was done different as it left the Senate back in April of this year, and how it's arrived to us now in this special session. With that, our goal is to be informed as we move forward on these important decisions. And are there any comments from committee members? Seeing none, we're adjourned.